Just going to give you a little outline of this session. So we're going to start off by chanting a mantra, and we're going to go with the mantra of Amitabha, who's one of the archetypal Buddhas in the mandala of the five Buddhas. He's the Buddha of the West, but also very much the Buddha of meditation and of compassion. And he transforms craving into, in a way, following our heart for what is most meaningful, in a way. So rather than renunciation, we're going for things that really inspire us, amongst other things. So we'll just do his mantra in a very plain way. We've been talking a lot about mantra in our team, expressing our preferences and dislikes around certain ways of doing mantras or a certain mantra. I really like doing the sort of very plain chant on one note, kind of quite. But we will also be doing some more melodic ones in a little bit later. So we're going to start off with that just for a short while, and then we're going to go into groups. The groups will be in for about 25 minutes, and it's kind of an open space. I'll say a little bit more about them just before we go into them. And then when we come out of the groups, there'll be time for Q&A, some questions, answers, a little bit of discussion, anything that's come up through the retreat, being inspired by the session that Maitri Pushpa led this morning, or through your discussions, or just your practice in general. And then after that, we're going to end with a ritual, which is basically dedicated to the Buddha and connecting with our potential, our aspirations to be and develop the qualities of the Buddha if we, And there'll be some readings, there'll be some mantra chanting in that. It'll be in English, in call and response, and you can join in or not join in as you feel. And that's the basic plan for this session. So the mantra, groups, Q&A, and then ritual. So with the mantras, as I said last night, it doesn't work if we're all unmuted and chanting away. So I'm just gonna chant this mantra, and Maitri Pushpa will be chanting some later, and we can be muted but joining in at home or not. But I just give you the invitation to give it a go, even if you're not someone who's chanted mantras before, and just see what happens. And the great thing about being on Zoom is that nobody else can hear you, so you don't need to be self-conscious about it. And I would also suggest that to really, especially with the plain ones, we're talking about being in the body. A mantra works with our energy, but it's a very physical thing. You can feel the reverberations in your body. You can free up energy in your body through doing a mantra. And in a way, we're trying to embody the qualities of the mantra as well. So if you just go really, really quietly, it's not going to have that effect. Whereas if you go for it a bit more, then you will feel it and it'll probably be more powerful. And as I said, nobody else, at least on the retreat, will hear you. There may be somebody in another room that might, but yeah. So we're going to do the mantra for Amitabha, and it's just Om Amideva Hri. We're just going to repeat that again and again on the same note, kind of thing. And when we're doing that, we're connecting with those qualities of compassion that he embodies. Om Amideva Hri. Om Amideva Hri. Om me devahui. Om ami 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 devahui. Okay, so just before we go into the groups, just want to say it's a space where we can bring ourselves in, connect with others. If there's stuff in our practice that feels live we want to share, we can do that. But it's, yeah, it's an open space, yeah. We're not going to say, here's a question. We want you to discuss this question in the group. Yeah. If there's something that's piqued your imagination or challenged you or whatever during the retreat, then of course you can bring that in there. But what would be really great if we can practice kind and mindful listening. Yeah. So not interrupting anybody, not giving opinions, not giving advice, just listening deeply to someone else's truth. And also being aware of each other, so not taking up, you know, obviously sometimes something big is going on and you might need a little bit more space, but just being aware that everybody else in the group is there. And I would also like to say something. So what would be good is maybe one person in the group volunteers to keep an eye on the time and just make sure that, you know, it's reasonably equal amount of time, and if someone looks like they're going on, just give them a little bit of a warning so they know to wind down. And the other thing that can be helpful and save time is if when one person speaks, they nominate the next person from the group. And if that person doesn't feel ready at that point, they can just say pass. Yeah. And again, if you feel more comfortable without your screen on, that's fine. I think it's quite nice if you do feel able to at least let people see you before you stop your video if you do want to be more private. Just to sort of be aware of each other, really sensitive to each other in the group. Everything that is said there is confidential. Of course, you can share what you've said in a bigger group if you want. So, Patricia, do you want to do that? So you'll get an invitation and you can just click on it.
So how long have we got, Bodil? Yeah.
We've got about 25 minutes.
25, yeah. Thanks.
And you'll get a 5-minute warning before the end just to let you know where things are at, even though there's a timer on your screen.
Yeah.
And a 1-minute warning at the very end. So, yes, this is a opportunity for Q&A or anything that we want to share with each other or explore collectively. So if you want to, you can just unmute yourself and ask. If that feels a bit too much, you can always just post something in the chat. And if you want that to be private, you could post it to one of the team and then we can bring it to the group, but nobody would know it's you. So it's so just want to check whether people are okay about us recording the Q&A. If you're not, perhaps you could just do a private message saying you'd rather not, or you could just stop your video and rename yourself so no one knows you're here. Just because sometimes we don't record it, and then people say, oh, shame you didn't record it, and blah, blah, blah. So as far as I'm aware, no one's objected, so we'll go with the recording then, Patricia. Okay, so anyone got anything they want to bring up or question or explore? Ideally around the theme or practice or meditation.
Not the meaning of life.
42, that's the meaning of life. If you're a fan of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, that is. I know it can be a little bit daunting to do it, speaking in a group with people you don't know that well, but does anyone feel bold?
Vaguely. I can. I found it very interesting in our group and in myself just to notice what a strong reaction I had to do not cheat it almost seemed punitive in some way, and I've never come across anything that direct in my study of Buddhism that was just like, no, do not. It's almost like, I feel like even like the precepts are often worded in a very flowery way, but it seems to be more of a practice, whilst this seems very much so like, no. It just brought up an interesting reaction of what that could mean. And I'm really grateful to you, Maitri Pushpa, for kind of breaking it down as well. And what I connected with the most was maybe more so than the historical figure, more so something about a higher self and a higher ideal, and not cheating on that. And again, the word doesn't sit easily with me, but something about not betraying that in any situation. I just wanted to say that. And that's it.
Thanks, Eglie. And I think that's really interesting you brought out that point, because, you know, I also don't like being directed to be told to do something or not told something. And one of the things that really? I like about the precepts is that they're not like commandments, they're not rules. They are these training principles that we take the underlying spiritual principle, and then it's up to us to try and apply it in our lives, you know, in any situation, you know, and we get, it's seen as a practice, we get better at it, you know. And I'm also aware so many of us, it's certainly been something too for me, is the default is to respond to things as if they're rules, or to, you know, feel bad if you don't do it or not. And as a teacher, I spend so much time, some people have been on courses I've taught, and people want me to say, what should I do, or what's this, and can you tell me that? And I always just sort of, so it depends, or well, it could be this. And I don't really like to say categorically, I don't like that kind of didactic style of teaching where you say, this is truth, this is the way to do something. So I think for me, I'm taking those lines provisionally. I think they contain, I think, roots of stuff that's really useful for practice. But I'm also aware that I need to be careful about, well, how do I interpret it? Do I use that as just another way of beating myself up? You know, if it says, do not cheat the Buddha, then I think of all the ways that I think I'm cheating the Buddha, and I feel, oh, I'm a terrible person, you know, or I must, you know, I'm not trying hard enough, I must push myself right to the rock face, you know, so that I'm not cheating the Buddha. So I think our own patterns and habits will very much influence how we respond to any teaching in the Dharma anyway, and the language, you know, how we respond to the language, and particularly when it's in that kind of a form. But it is interesting when it brings up those reactions in us, isn't it? So what's all that about? You know, there's a lot of language about freedom and liberation, isn't there, in the Dharma, and how we interpret it may not be quite how it was meant, because also it's being translated from Pali or Sanskrit, and there's different ideas of freedom, you know, whether it's freedom from unskillful mental states or our conditioning and our views is one thing in a Dharmic perspective, but then we've also got this idea that we should be free and don't want anybody to give us rules that we have to abide by. I think we can react against those. I don't know. I'm just burbling. Maitri Pushpa, what do you reckon?
I think yes to all of those things. I think part of it, as I was trying to draw out, is, yeah, we do, we can react to things like do not or don't, or make sure, or it is necessary. Whoa, it is necessary. How do you know what's necessary for me? So that thing of don't do this, don't do that, do what it can do is send you down the route that Bodhilila was saying of I must do this, I must do that, or be perfect, you know, or try to be perfect about things. Or it can be bringing us up short. cheating, Buddha? Wait a minute, what's this together? Let me think about, what does it mean to cheat? What does it mean, the Buddha, to cheat the Buddha? What? And sometimes these kind of stop in your track questions. Punitive was a great word. Yeah, don't do this. Well, if I do it, what's going to happen to me? Well, the Buddha isn't going to come and go, I don't, well, maybe he will, but that Buddha is the Buddha in you. It's your sense of that was unskillful, that wasn't kind, that wasn't helpful, that was reactive, that wasn't being open to what actually is going on. So just making us think about what does it mean? And I think even beneath all that is the question of, is this important to me? What is important to me? Yeah, exactly. And you can almost think of, what is the Buddha in that sense to me? What is important? And I don't want to, well, I keep coming back to that phrase, don't I? Sell ourselves short on our potential. And I think that's, well, don't cheat on your potential. Don't lose your potential. You know, don't underestimate yourself. So as usual with words, you can come at it many different ways. Mm-hmm. And yeah, as Bodhilila was saying, holding lightly to it, try not to be too literal about it. And if there's a really strong, particularly negative reaction, emotional reaction to it, we'll just stop and say, whoa, where did that come from? What's going on here? Because if there's such a strong reaction, we're so caught up in the reaction, we can almost forget what set it off in the first place. So we're actually not listening to the teaching. We're not thinking about it. We're not seeing, well, is this useful to me? Or it could be these three lines just don't resonate with you. They're not useful to you, but they might have been useful in that you thought about what works for you and what doesn't. And that's such an important part of our practice, is what is going to encourage us to keep coming back to our meditation? What is going to encourage us to keep thinking about more skillful, kinder speech, of acting more ethically? How am I going to encourage that myself? So sometimes lighting a fire under you might be the thing to do. And some people are like, no, thank you. That is not my way. But we don't know until we start exploring and experimenting with different forms, different approaches. I was in a group with someone who was saying, he's just sort of dipping his toe in the water with meditation. He meditates with apps and he's just dipping his toe in. He thought he'd come along to this. Fantastic. What works for him? The only way we find out is to explore. And that's very much what the Dharma is about, I think. Does that help or is that too much, Egle?
No, that's helpful. Thank you. Good to hear both of your thoughts.
Thank you for your question. Yeah.
And actually, just listening to you, Maitri Pushpa, I'm just thinking so much in Buddhism is saying that everything depends on conditions. Things arise in dependence on different sets of conditions. Yeah. We've had so much conditioning that has affected us and our lives and our views and our responses, our reactions, the feelings we have to anything. And a lot of that is not conscious. Yeah. So when we find ourselves reacting strongly to something, then that's a real opportunity, actually, for uncovering some of those conditions, some of those views, for gaining a bit more awareness, insight, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a certain perspective that, you know, everything is an opportunity for practice, particularly all the things we don't like and we react to. So, yeah, I think it's just interesting to be curious about what, oh, I see someone's just at that very moment.
Mind-to-mind transmission there, you and books. Curiosity. Yeah.
But I think we do have that sort of inner dictator, don't we, that thinks we should do things and we internalise from, you know, maybe parents, family, school, society, ideas of right and wrong and what we should do or not do, and that idea of punishment, you know. So we kind of conflate not doing what we think other people want us to do or doing what people think we shouldn't do with punishment, and therefore when we hear a sort of direct guidance like that, we think it's punitive, but it's not necessarily, is it? You know, do not cheat the Buddha. What's going to happen to you if you do? That's just, you know, it was interesting because, you know, I am intrigued by this line. And again, I don't think that you really can cheat the Buddha on a certain level, because the Buddha and the archetypal Buddhas, they were there. They had that awareness of everything and everyone, and they're not going to be bothered by it. You know, the Buddha, there's so many teachings where he's saying, oh, he's like the sun or he's like the rain cloud, and he's sharing his Dharma for everybody. And sometimes he's very explicit, you know, about all the different kinds of people. And it's not whether you're deserving or not. It's not about how, you know, how good you are, the skills you are, how, you know, your status, your abilities, your qualities. He's just doing it for everybody, you know, to respond to and grow in their own way. So from that point of view, I think that, you know, we could be fairly hopeful the Buddha's not going to come up there and punish us. But we can also project those things onto Buddhas, can't we? We can think, oh, it's interesting when we get into our own personal connections or relationships, at least in our minds with some of these figures, what we do with them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have time for another question or exploration or clarification if anyone. Ah, Craig has unmuted. Danger, danger.
I was just thinking about this idea of cheating and how really only you can know truly if you're cheating yourself, but that can be very difficult to know, I think. You know, I think a lot of people, particularly in the West, come to Buddhism because they're feeling very troubled, or there's something not going right in their life. Not everyone, but I think many people I've met and are looking for some kind of liberation from how they're feeling, because they're not feeling very good. And, you know, and I'm just taking meditation aspect as an example. You know, I think for people, you know, there's this kind of emphasis to cultivate self-awareness and to sit with oneself, which is good, but I think, you know, obviously you have to pace yourself, and you know, you don't know as you drop below the surface waves and you're coming down into more the deeper levels of consciousness, the ocean, as a metaphor, you can encounter all sorts of things, you know, sea monsters and really scary things can be lurking in there, you know, the stuff that you've normally distracted yourself from, maybe by risk-taking behaviors or drinking or drugs or just constantly distracting yourself, television, whatever. You know, and I was saying in the breakout room about an experience I went to, Vipassana retreat, you know, complete silence, no phone, I think. And it was it was a deeply disturbing experience, really, actually. I wasn't really ready for it. And I didn't have that. I'd never heard of Metta Bhavana. So I didn't have that compassion on board, just the bear. And just coming back to that cheating thing, you know, I think there's like, then, you know, from day two I was kind of battling myself, is this really good for me? But I felt like I was cheating if I left, which, you know, it's not always that simple, is it, black and white? You know, must just do what I'm, you know, do the meditation, just stay on the cushion, you know. I think there is some merit in that sometimes, but sometimes that doing that exactly would be cheating yourself. Because you're not really listening to what you need right now, not really listening to what your body is telling you. You know, your body might be really screaming out, actually, this is not, you're not ready for this. You need to kind of take a step back, slow down a little bit. No. But I just think that's something we have to be very mindful of. And we, you know, I found for me, it's good sometimes to, having a very strong reaction to something, to not make a snap decision, you know, in daily life, you know, and just sit with it for a little bit, just breathe, you know, not do anything. yeah, and then move forward. But I hope that what I just said made sense. But yeah, but that brought all that up for me, that that first line cheating on the Buddha, you know, this you know, that like, attitude must fix myself, must do this. And I think that can be yeah, it gets into this self-flagellation thing, which I think a few people have mentioned already. That's yeah, it's a different kind of cheating.
Yeah, I think you've brought a lot of really important points up there, Craig. And just starting with the last one, you know, that self-flagellation. I think it is very tempting, and often people do that if they're on a path of self-development or spiritual development, to, you know, want to be perfect or, you know, be moving towards the light and denying all the other bits. And then when you see that you don't match up to the ideal, to then use that as a way of criticizing yourself, self-flagellation or whatever, undermining yourself. Yeah. I remember one time I was all set up to go on like a 2-week solitary, and I got all my books that I was going to be studying and all these practices I was going to do. And the first book I had was one of Pema Chodron's, and it was like on the very first page, he had something like, fundamentally, the desire to transform oneself is an act of aggression against the self, something along those lines. And that really, you know, I really was struck by that, because that was exactly what I had been doing. And I just sort of, in the end, I just let go of all the things I was supposed to be doing and just sort of sat reflecting a bit more on that, really. There's kind of paradoxes, because in some ways, inherent in the path, inherent in our practice, is that idea, it's not linear, but of sort of progress, transformation, liberation, freeing, opening, whatever it, however we want to do that, awakening. And that certain states and actions may be more skillful, more beneficial, more ethical than others. You know, so it's not that to say that it's, you know, anything goes, and it's just as good to be having murderous fantasies about someone as sort of having some intentions for their well-being, you know. And at the same time, sometimes less is more, and we just have to be, well, we have to be with where we are anyway, which may be in all the unskillful starts, in order to get beyond them and be able to transform and let them go. It's sort of like we have to really fully let ourselves experience whatever's there, I think. And I think, yes, sometimes what's there is really difficult. And, you know, some people have had a lot of trauma in their lives, or they may be going through a lot of trauma at the time. And in that case, you know, meditation may be the worst thing to be doing, for instance, you know. Anyway, could go on a lot, but Maitri Pushpa, anything you want to say before we...
No, but just to add in what you both said is bringing... Craig, you mentioned you weren't familiar with metabolism, just bringing in kindness to ourselves and knowing when, okay, I've dipped my toe in enough, that's enough for now. That's enough for now. And sometimes now can be way down the line, and sometimes now can be the next breath. That, you know, and learning that is takes time and practice, doesn't it? Bringing in kindness. And I suppose just to end, the last one way of thinking of that is, if it was your good friend, your best friend going through the same thing, what would you tell them? Give it a break. Give it a break, Craig. Or yeah, keep going, Craig. Treat yourself as your best friend. Yeah. Okay. Over to you, Bodhi Lila.
Okay, so that's the end of the Q&A session. And we're going to end with a simple ritual called a threefold puja. So I'm going to say a little bit about ritual, and I'm also going to say a little bit about but just because I feel like it. Well, we have been talking about the Buddha, haven't we? And you were talking about all the different ways of the Buddha. I mean, the Buddha himself used to say that it wasn't his body that was him. You know, he got really frustrated and annoyed with people who, you know, like there was somebody who was ill and dying and wanted to see the Buddha before he died. And the Buddha was saying, well, why did you do that? Because actually you see me through my teachings, through the Dharma. That's where you see me, this body, this, that's not me. You know, and those who see the body, they're not seeing the real Buddha, but those who sort of see and practice the teachings, they're seeing the real Buddha and me. So that's sort of kind of interesting that he had that kind of a view. So the Buddha, you know, he was around so many years ago, and in a way we've got all the stories, we've got teachings that have been passed down orally, but are very clearly been in a particular format, so they've come through other people. And also a lot of the stories, there's so much metaphor and symbolism, archetype, you know, especially if you look at the Buddha's biography, you can't understand that in a literal way, all of it. But there's a truth there as well that can resonate in different ways. So I think in terms of spiritual practice, we need to bring in all of ourselves, yeah? Not just our rational mind, not just our emotions, but we need to bring in our bodies, we need to bring in the unconscious, we need to bring in all the part of our mind that's not about thinking, you know, that may not even be conceptual, all those kinds of things. So there's different ways that we can bring in different parts of ourselves. So like mantra, for instance, is one way. A devotional practice, physical practice, working with energy, working with sound. Ritual is another way. I mean, we all have rituals in our everyday lives, but ritual in this particular context, in a way, is where we connect with what is most important to us, what we value, what we aspire to, what we would like to move towards, what we'd like to be more like. And there's almost like a sort of surrendering of our ego and all our normal ways of wanting to be or how we are, just to actually allow our hearts and our minds to be touched by that and to express that, not just have it internally. So that's kind of one of the reasons why we do ritual, and to make that more conscious in a way, the intentions, and to connect with our hearts and our minds as well. So the ritual we're going to be doing, it's got three sets of, well, the first bit's called opening reverence, there's just one verse, and then there's another two sections which each have three verses each, which we'll do in call and response, like we did yesterday. But we're also going to have a couple of readings and a couple of mantras along the way. So we were talking quite a lot about the qualities of the Buddha. Maitri Prishpa was talking quite a lot about that this morning. So I thought I would read an extract from an early description of the Buddha's qualities from something called the Sutta Nipata, which I guess is at least a couple of thousand years old. But, you know, it kind of communicates some things. Obviously, it's just a snapshot of what somebody thought were some of his qualities. But just listen to them and see if any of them, maybe one of them might actually touch you, or maybe you find yourself reacting to all of them, but just see. Traditionally, and I know not everyone here is a Buddhist, and that's fine, we're not expecting you to be, but when people decide that they do want to commit themselves to the Buddha and his teachings, they do what they call, they go for refuge to the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, the three jewels of the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Buddha, in a way, being the ideal that we can aspire to. The Dharma being truth, reality, and also the teachings that he gave, the practices he gave to help us be able to become just like him, have those same awakenings, insights to become Buddhas ourselves. And then the Sangha, the sort of spiritual community. So when we go for refuge, I'm just going to clarify this to the Sangha, we're going to refuge to the Sangha of enlightened beings, or those whose enlightenment is assured, like the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas. I suppose you could, you know, if there's someone you think is like really, really advanced, say like the Dalai Lama, maybe that would be somebody. You know, Maitri Pushpa was talking about those who are wise, those who are further along the path than us. People would sort of say to the Buddha for refuge I go, and all that, to the Dharma for refuge I go, to the Sangha for refuge I go. We hear that in the very earliest stories of the Buddha when he's wandering around offering teachings to people, and often they feel that they have had a great insight awakening. Sometimes they want to join his community, but they'll often have that. So I'm just going to read something around that. And I think that's it. And Maitri Pushpa is going to be doing a couple of Shakyamuni mantras. So Shakyamuni is the historical Buddha. And so when you chant his mantra in a way, it's kind of connecting with the Buddha, paying respect to the Buddha, also connecting to our own potential to be Buddhas and our own Buddha nature. Okay, so that's enough talking. So if you want to get yourselves in your meditation posture, probably, because we're going to do a ritual. We'll just pause for a couple of minutes. So after the opening reverence, there'll be a description of the Buddha, followed by Buddha Shakyamuni mantra. After the reverence to the three jewels, there'll be a description of going for refuge at the time of the Buddha. And then after offerings to the Buddha, there'll be another Shakyamuni mantra. And feel free to join in or not join in. But if you're curious, why not just try it and see what it feels like? You're not committing to anything. You're not saying you're a Buddhist just by joining in the ritual. Threefold puja, opening reverence. We reverence the Buddha.
We reverence the Buddha.
The perfectly enlightened one.
The perfectly enlightened one.
The shower of the way.
The shower of the way.
We reverence the Dharma.
We reverence the Dharma.
The teaching of the Buddha.
The teaching of the Buddha.
Which leads from darkness to light.
Which leads from darkness to light.
We reverence the Sangha.
We reverence the Sangha.
The fellowship of the Buddha's disciples.
The fellowship of the Buddha's disciples.
That inspires and guides.
That inspires and guides.
So, description of the Buddha's qualities. He has no anger, no fear, and no pride. Nothing disturbs his composure, and nothing gives him cause for regret. He is the wise man who is restrained in speech. He does not conceal anything, and there is nothing he holds on to. Without acquisitiveness or envy, He remains unobtrusive. He has no disdain or insult for anyone. He is not a man who is full of himself, or a man who is addicted to pleasure. He is a man who is gentle and alert, with no blind faith. He shows no aversion to anything. He is not a person who works because he wants something. If he gets nothing at all, he remains unperturbed. There is no craving to build up the passion to taste new pleasures. His mindfulness holds him poised in constant even-mindedness, where arrogance is impossible. He makes no comparisons with the rest of the world as superior, inferior, or equal. Because he understands the way things are, he is free from dependency, and there is nothing he relies on. For him, there is no more craving to exist or craving not to exist. This is what I call a man who is calmed. It is a man who does not seek after pleasure, who has nothing to tie him down, who has gone beyond the pull of attachment. A man with nothing in him that he grasps at as his, and nothing in him that he rejects as not his. He is a man who receives false criticisms from other people, but who remains undisturbed and unmoved by their words.
Mahamuni, Shakyamuni, Swaha. Om Muni Muni, Mahamuni, Shakyamuni, Swaha. Om Muni Muni, Mahamuni, Shakyamuni. Swaha. Om Muni Muni Mahamuni Shakyamuni Swaha. Om Muni Muni Mahamuni Shakyamuni Swaha.
Reverence to the three jewels. We reverence the Buddha. We reverence the Buddha.
We reverence the Buddha.
And aspire to follow him.
And aspire to follow him.
The Buddha was born as we are born.
The Buddha was born as we are born.
What the Buddha overcame, we too can overcome.
What the Buddha overcame, we too can overcome.
What the Buddha attained, we too can attain.
What the Buddha attained, we too can attain.
We reverence the Dharma.
We reverence the Dharma.
And aspire to follow it.
And aspire to follow it.
With body, speech, and mind until the end.
With body, speech, and mind until the end.
The truth in all its aspects.
The truth in all its aspects.
The path in all its stages.
The path in all its stages.
We aspire to study, practice, realize.
We aspire to study, practice, realize.
We reverence the Sangha.
We reverence the Sangha.
And aspire to follow it.
And aspire to follow it.
The fellowship of those who tread the way.
The fellowship of those who tread the way.
As one by one, we make our own commitment.
As one by one, we make our own commitment.
An ever-widening circle, the Sangha grows.
An ever-widening circle, the Sangha grows.
Going for refuge at the time of the Buddha. Sometimes when reading the Buddhist scriptures, we get the impression that the Dharma is a matter of lists. But it wasn't like that at the beginning. It was all fresh, all original, all creative. The Buddha would speak from the depths of his spiritual experience. He would expound the truth. He would show the way leading to enlightenment, and the person to whom he was speaking would be absolutely astounded and overwhelmed. In some cases, they may not be able to speak or do more than stammer a few incoherent words. Something had been revealed to them. Something had burst upon them that was above and beyond their ordinary understanding. For an instant, at least, they glimpsed the truth, and the experience staggered them. Time and again, on occasions of this sort, the scriptures tell us that the person concerned exclaimed, "Excellent, Lord, excellent!" as if one should set up again that which had been overthrown, or reveal that which had been hidden, or should disclose the road to someone who was astray, or should carry a lamp into darkness, saying, "They that have eyes will see." Even so has the truth been manifested by the Exalted One in many ways. He or she would feel deeply affected, deeply moved, deeply stirred. Sometimes there are external manifestations of this. Their hair might stand on end, they might shed tears, or they might be seized by a fit of trembling. They would have a tremendous experience, an experience of illumination, a tremendous sense of freedom, of emancipation, as though a great burden had been lifted from the back, or as though they'd suddenly been let out of prison, or as though they could at last see their way. The questioner, the listener, would feel spiritually reborn, would feel like a new man or woman. And then, out of the depth of their gratitude, they would fervently exclaim, "To the Buddha for refuge I go, to the Dharma for refuge I go, to the Sangha for refuge I go." So we can see where the going for refuge had its origin and of its tremendous spiritual significance. It's the heartfelt response of one's total being to the impact of the truth, the impact of reality. One commits oneself to the truth. One surrenders to the truth. One wants to devote one's whole life to the truth. Offerings to the Buddha. Reverencing the Buddha.
Reverencing the Buddha.
We offer flowers.
We offer flowers.
Flowers that today are fresh and sweetly blooming.
Flowers that today are fresh and sweetly blooming.
Flowers that tomorrow are faded and fallen.
Flowers that tomorrow are faded and fallen.
Our bodies too, like flowers, will pass away.
Our bodies too, like flowers, will pass away.
Reverencing the Buddha, we offer candles.
Reverencing the Buddha, we offer candles.
To him who is the light, we offer light.
To him who is the light, we offer light.
From his greater lamp, a lesser lamp we light within us.
From his greater lamp, a lesser lamp we light within us.
The lamp of Bodhi, shining within our hearts.
The lamp of Bodhi, shining within our hearts.
Reverencing the Buddha, we offer incense.
Reverencing the Buddha, we offer incense.
Incense whose fragrance pervades the air.
Incense whose fragrance pervades the air.
The fragrance of the perfect life.
The fragrance of the perfect life.
Sweeter than incense.
Sweeter than incense.
Spreads in all directions throughout the world.
Spreads in all directions throughout the world. Muni Muni Maha Muni Shakya Muni Sadhu Muni Muni Maha Muni Shakya Muni Sadhu Om 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 Muni Maha Muni Shakya Muni Sadhu Om Muni Muni Maha Muni Shakya Muni Sadhu Om Muni Muni Maha Muni Shakya Muni Maha Muni Shakya Muni Sadhu.
So that brings this session to an end. Thank you all for coming and practicing. And I just felt we've gone quite deep very quickly. For me, it feels there's a lot of depth, there's a lot of spaciousness that has been created collectively. So just being aware of that this evening, that you may be feeling a little bit more open, a little bit more sensitive, stuff might be coming up for you now we're on retreat. And if you are living with somebody, just maybe either let them know that you might need a little bit more space. And, well, it's your choice, but maybe try and have a little bit of a quieter evening. Don't binge watch a whole series on Netflix or something. Yeah. So see you tomorrow. So we got early morning meditation at 8, led by Maitri Pushpa. I'll be leading the 10:30 session, and then we'll have another session like this, though not necessarily with a puja at 4. So if you want to unmute yourself or post in the chat, that's fine. Thank you all for coming, and yes, go well. Have a good evening.